Good morning to you, and Mr. Liz, good morning to you. Do either of you have any questions before we begin?
No, Your Honor.
Then, Ms. Hartner, you may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Chelsea Hartner from the Public Defender's Office in Madison County, attorney for the appellant Charles Simons. This is an appeal from the Madison County District Court. This case also involves a Madison County District Court case, CR 18327. In that case, Mr. Simons had been placed on a term of probation that would have ended on September 19th, 2021. On July 5th of 2021, Simons was arrested for a driving under the influence charge. And on July 26th, 2021, the state filed a motion to revoke his probation in 18327. Simons first appeared on the revocation proceeding in 18327 on August 30th of 2021. And for
before you get too much further involved there, has that motion to revoke probation been resolved?
Yes.
And when was it resolved?
January of 2023.
All right, thank you.
For purposes relevant here, that probation revocation proceeding was continued to January 20th of 2022. On January 7th of 2022, probation conducted a search pursuant to that order. This would have been after the term should have ended in September of 2021 while the revocation was pending. During that search, they found a methamphetamine pipe, and Simon was arrested, and that's the basis of the present case we have here. In this case, he filed a motion to suppress, alleging that probation did not have any authority at that time to conduct a search because its term had ended. And with the revocation pending, the court had no authority to extend his term past that September date without first finding that a violation had occurred. That motion was overruled.
What did the district court judge say about that?
The district court found that the delay was because of continuances filed by Mr. Simons, and we're not disputing that. That's correct. And that there had been no Fourth Amendment violation, and he overruled it, and he declined to address the issue of whether or not consent occurred. Bench trial was had in this matter, and Simons was found guilty and to possession.
So how do you respond essentially to the issue of this was all your fault? You asked for the continuances.
That's basically what he said. I don't really think the lower court gave an opinion as to whether or not probation would continue past that date without the finding of the violation, but just said you asked for the continuances, so the basically held the search was lawful because he had asked for the continuance.
Did the court advise the appellant that the terms of probation were going to continue while the pendency of that motion to revoke probation was going on?
That is in the record that we provided to the lower court. It's in the record here. He was advised that you're still on probation, things of that nature. I expect you to comply with your probation. He was advised of that, but no bond was set. In that regard, just that he was told he was on probation.
Until there's a ruling. Is that correct?
More or less,
yeah. You said there was a ruling on the motion to revoke probation in January of 2023. How was that motion resolved?
By plea.
And then was there a sentence imposed?
Yes.
And what was the sentence?
I believe it was 1 year at the Department of Corrections consecutive to his sentence in this case.
And you're not disputing that the judge had jurisdiction to enter that sentencing order?
I'm not disputing he has jurisdiction to enter that sentence. I'm just saying until the violation is found, he can't continue probation. So there's nothing in our argument that disputes his ability to sentence a defendant. I mean, I think that case law on that is clear. As long as the revocation is filed before the end of the term or within a reasonable time thereafter, then that's proper, and that happened here. It was filed prior to the end of probation here.
Thank you.
The court places him on a term of probation.
The court
places your client on a term of probation initially.
Yes.
Under the statute, does the court have an ability to amend that term of probation?
Yes. I think it's 29-2263.
What are the bases for amending that term of probation?
So it can end it early at any time, or under subsection 3, it states it can modify conditions. And the conditions as permitted, it can modify, eliminate, add as allowed by 2262, which lays out conditions, not length of the term. So it's not my position that that statute doesn't permit him to extend the term.
But there are occasions to extend the term upon agreement of the parties, request of the defendant, finding of a violation, a revocation. Are those factors that the court can consider?
My reading of the statutes is the only way they can extend the term is if a motion to revoke is filed, the court finds a violation, and then pursuant to, I think it's 2268, he can extend the probation if they decide not to revoke. And so I don't think there's any other mechanism within the probation statutes that just allow him to extend the probation.
And your argument is that that's what the court did?
That's what they did. So after that term had ended, the court, until that violation is found, can't extend that probation. It doesn't have the ability to do that because the statute on 2267 says when a motion to revoke is filed, the court shall not revoke and shall not increase probation requirements. And logically, increasing the probation requirements would include extending the time. And so until the court makes a ruling on the motion to revoke, it doesn't have the ability to increase the length of the term. And so I think the court has gotten through most of my argument on that. And so, based upon the facts here, since the court could not extend the time, therefore probation had no authority to request the search after that term had ended. And so for that reason, that search was unlawful. And I would ask the court on that to reverse the ruling on the motion to suppress.
If the court agrees with your term of probation argument, my recollection is the district court did not rule upon the consent issue because it didn't feel it needed to. Can this court reach that issue on the facts before it?
I don't think so because I don't think there's any ruling whatsoever. I think we'd have to remand back below to address on that issue.
Was your client informed after the term of probation that he was still on probation?
He was informed by the judge that the judge considered him on probation during the revocation proceedings. I think there was three hearings that are in-person hearings that occurred between that August 30th date when he initially appeared and then before the search where the judge is like, and you're still on probation until I say otherwise, basically. He was told that, but based upon my reading of the statutes, I don't think the judge has the authority to do that. And so, as such, I don't think probation had the authority to conduct that search.
Could the appellant have consented to the probation? I'm sorry, could the appellant have consented to the probation search?
I think you can consent to a search at any time if you're asked. Based upon the hearing, I don't think that's what happened. I think he was told by the probation officer, show me your room, essentially, and he complied with that order. And so I think he could have. I don't think that's what happened here, but we didn't have a ruling on that in the lower court. In addition to the search, Mr. Simons also argues that his term at the Department of Corrections was excessive. He was sentenced to a maximum term. I think the court neglected to look at several things in this sentencing. One of those was this is a narcotic related conviction, both the original offense and the new in the newer case. He wanted to address his addiction while he was awaiting sentencing. He was able to get a drug and alcohol evaluation, had a bed at a treatment facility, and had the court continue or put him on probation here, he could have proceeded with that and worked on his addiction issues. He told the court he wanted to be sober, he wanted to continue to be clean, and so I think that allowing him to do that would have been helpful for him. Additionally, there was no violence involved in this. Sorry.
The sentence was within statutory limits, correct?
Yes.
So I'm hearing lots of arguments that were properly addressed to the trial court. How did the trial court abuse its discretion?
Well, I think he didn't really consider that this is a substance abuse related and nonviolent offense, and that I think that probation would have been appropriate. It's a class 4 felony. Unless there's substantial and compelling reasons not to place him on probation, the court should place him on probation. And I just think that based upon the evidence at the sentencing hearing, I think that the court erred and by sentencing to the Department of Corrections rather than letting him be on probation and continuing with the treatment he had set up.
Okay, thank you.
So, so for those reasons, I would ask the court to overrule or to reverse the court's ruling on the motion to suppress and or to remand back down either to reduce his sentence or to resentence him to a term of probation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Liss, good morning to you.
Good morning. Please, the court, Nathan Liss, appearing on behalf of the appellate of the state of Nebraska. As far as the denial of the motion to suppress, we maintain that Simons was still on probation when his residence was searched in January of 2022, so the search was lawful and the motion to suppress was properly denied. It appears we're all on the same page with respect to the relevant facts and the central question before us, so I'll just get right to it. It's set forth in our probation statutes. In our case law, when a person is serving a term of probation, there are two potential outcomes. Number one, under 29-2264, if the person satisfactorily completes the entire term of their probation or they are successfully discharged prior to that, the sentencing court shall issue an order releasing the offender from probation. Or number two, if the state has initiated a revocation proceeding, the court must determine whether the alleged violation has occurred, and if so, it must proceed with the disposition authorized by 29-2268. Neither of these things occurred prior to Simon's original probation discharge date in September of 2021, nor did they occur prior to the search of his residence in January of 2022.
Can I ask you about how a statute applies to your argument?
Sure.
Section 29-2263 sub 4A says, upon completion of the term of probation, jumping ahead a little bit, the probationer shall be relieved of any obligations imposed by the order of the court and shall have satisfied the sins of his or her crime. So at the end of the term, I understand your argument to say that if you don't receive this discharge order, you continue to be on probation. But how does that jive with that statute?
Well, I read that section 4A that you just recited in conjunction with 29-2264 sub 1, which is the one I was just referring to mean that in order to get discharged, you have to complete probation and the court has to actually issue an order releasing you and discharging you from probation. And I think that's also
What if that doesn't happen? The probation term just continues until the court issues the order contemplated by 2264?
Well, if it doesn't happen immediately upon that date, then someone needs to file a motion or take some action to get it to happen. I mean, I guess the point is that it's not self-executing.
Is there a gap in the statutes?
Well, it doesn't. Our statutes don't address this as cleanly as they probably should. So,
would it be the state's burden to say, Judge, wait a minute, we've got to dispose of this?
If the defendant believes that their probation term has expired and they haven't received an order that says as much, I think that it would be incumbent upon them to ask the court for an order releasing them from probation.
In the absence of an order, I don't know how many choices there are, but at least two are. One is you get to the end of the term and it self-executes, you're done, or you get to the end of the term and it self-executes and you're continued in the absence of an order. Is there another choice?
Well, it's our position that there's nothing that's self-executing here.
Okay.
If you successfully complete it, or the court can discharge you prior to that, then the court, in the statute says this, shall issue an order saying that you're discharged from probation. The only other thing that can happen there is if we go through a revocation proceeding and we have those dispositions. But to say that it's just self-executing, I don't find any authority for that, and we disagree with that, and I think State v. Kennedy runs contrary to that, because when you look at State v. Kennedy, this court said that when a probation revocation motion has been filed, the court's not authorized to order an unsatisfactory or unsuccessful termination of probation because our probation statutes don't authorize that disposition. The point being that if this disposition is not authorized by statute and the court can't order that disposition, it necessarily follows that it can't be self-executing either, which is the appellant's position here. And we would also note with respect to the appellant's position that this is self-executing, our case law is clear that when a probation revocation motion is filed, our case law says that a probation revocation hearing is a continuation of the original prosecution for which probation was imposed. It's not a separate proceeding. There's no gap or hiatus between the proceedings, as the appellant would seem to
suggest. The underlying criminal case exists.
I'm sorry?
I'm sorry, is that right? Is that the point? The underlying criminal case still exists.
Right, and the revocation hearing, if you have a motion to revoke, is a continuation of that. There's no gap in here where you would have self-executing discharge. It's just one proceeding.
All of our case law, at least to date, as I've at least been informed, says that the probation revocation proceeding pendency keeps the probation alive for the purpose of determining whether there was a violation, and if so, what the consequences of the violation should be. So far, so good?
Yes.
We've never said, as far as I know, or as far as at least has been cited, that the probation continues during that period between the end of the term and the resolution of the pending revocation proceeding, that all of the other conditions remain in effect. Have we ever said that?
Not to my knowledge.
So that's really the question that ultimately is at the heart of this appeal, right?
Correct.
And your best argument based on the statutes that it remains alive during the pendency, particularly where the defendant has caused the revocation hearing to be delayed beyond the expiration of the term, is what?
Well, particularly where they've done so and where there's a motion to revoke that's on file, I think that between the statutes, which would say that in order to be discharged, you need to receive an order. And then when I look at State v. Kennedy, it talks about the fact that there's really no such thing in our statutes as just being unsatisfactorily released. A discharge, it contemplates and means, as the legislature would have intended, that you have completed probation and you have been satisfactorily released. So something else isn't possible unless we're in a revocation proceeding, in which case those dispositions are authorized. So there's no, when I look at our statutes and our case law, in particular Kennedy, there's no remedy that would allow for the self-executing discharge in between, which is what the appellant is suggesting happened here. And as I'm reading our statute and case law, I don't see anything that authorizes that.
Assuming the dates that were provided by the appellant of the resolution of the motion to revoke probation being January 2023, I believe that's about 16 months after what would have been the originally sentenced finishing date of the probation. Is it the state's position that the appellant was on probation for that entire 16 months, or continue to be on probation for that entire 16 months?
Yeah, it would have to be based on our argument. Since it's not self-executing, without an order releasing them from probation, they would remain on probation until they get an order of disposition through the revocation proceeding, correct?
Would that timing have extended the term of probation beyond the maximum permitted by statute?
No, I don't believe so, because the the offense in question here was a Class 4 felony for which he originally received probation. You could get up to 5 years on that. He got 18 months, and then I believe it was continued for about another 18 months before
he was still within 5 years.
Right.
Is the key to your argument that it was the defendant who asked for these continuances and caused this to go on for so long?
Well, that's a component of it, certainly, to the extent they're making sort of an equitable argument that this isn't really fair.
Not a statutory argument.
I'm sorry?
Not a statutory argument. Equitable argument.
No, I mean, the heart of my argument is more statute and case law, but I think that's certainly relevant to the extent that there's sort of equitable notions here of this isn't really fair that I would remain on probation, and our response, if we're going to talk equity, is, well, you were the one that caused the motion to revoke to get filed, and then you were the one that, you know, continued it for 18 months. So if it seems like a long time that you remained on probation, assuming you would agree with the argument that it wasn't self-executing and they remained on probation, well, it was their doing that led to them being on probation.
Is there a proposition about strictly construing criminal statutes?
There is, correct. And that's, I mean, our argument, the heart of it, is that our statutes and case law are consistent with the position we're advocating here. I'm not relying on equity. I'm simply responding to the Chief's question in that regard. So from a legal standpoint, we disagree with Simon's assertion that he received a self-executing discharge in September of 2021. We also disagree with it from a policy standpoint. I'm not going to rehash the arguments set forth in our brief, but we would reiterate that if his position were adopted, it would result in a windfall for probationers who don't comply with their the terms of their probation.
If we were to disagree with your position on whether he was on probation or not, what should we do with the consent argument that was raised by the state?
Well, I'm not...
Are you still relying on that argument?
I'm not going to go as far as to concede that consent wouldn't work here, but it's I feel like it's a bit of a tough sell given the circumstances. I mean, he was advised throughout these proceedings that he was to remain on probation, so he was under that understanding. The probation officer testified that when she showed up to do this search that he had consented, as he had done before, to probation searches. I mean, all of the circumstances to me feel much like somebody acquiesced in a search that they were required to comply with, as opposed to somebody simply just giving actual voluntary consent. Given that the district court didn't address it, I mean, where does that leave you? We don't really have many factual findings with respect to consent. There's not really any dispute on the facts, so I'm not sure if that matters. Generally speaking, consent under Modlin, whether actual consent was given is a question of law, so I think you could address it. As far as where we stand, again, I'm not going to concede that consent wasn't valid, but I think it's a bit of a tough sell, to be honest.
You said that if we were to agree with the appellant, it would be a windfall for defendants on probation. Can you elaborate on that?
Well, I think it would be a windfall for probationers who aren't complying with the terms of their probation. You could have situations, like, I guess my understanding of the appellant's position has shifted a little bit based on their opening and reply briefs, but assuming that they're just saying that during these gaps, you don't have to comply with probation, and you have a situation where somebody here has it's undisputed from this record, repeatedly did not comply with the terms of his probation. Then when the motion to revoke gets filed, they continue that out, and then when they should be complying with the terms of their probation, they don't have to do anything whatsoever. And with respect to this gap, I guess if you're rejecting our argument, if that's how this shakes out, then regardless of how much time they continue this thing out, they don't have to comply with any terms of probation.
But they're still subject to the revocation and still can be sent under the charge you're originally convicted of.
They could.
So
they could.
Not any worse than they were to begin with. If they hadn't been put on probation, they would have been sentenced under the charge they were convicted of.
You could look at it that way. If there are no further questions, we would ask you to affirm the judgment of the district court. If that's not what's happening here, we would ask for clarification as to how this is supposed to be handled, in particular in light of this case. I don't think the state and the district court certainly contemplated that with this being continued for 18 months, that the person would be not subject to the continuing terms of probation. So if that's not the case, I think that it would be helpful for people to know that.
Is there any reason the district court couldn't have placed the defendant on bond and made a condition of the bond to comply with the original terms of probation until the motion to revoke was ruled upon?
Is there any reason the district court could not have? Not to my knowledge. I think the district court could have. It probably did not assume it would need to because it was under the assumption that probation was continuing. The district court advised the defendant that he would still continue to be under the terms of probation. The defendant acknowledged he understood that. So to the extent that it actually self-executed, there was a self-executing discharge here unbeknownst to the district court, it wouldn't have done that. So further questions, I'll submit the matter. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal?
No, Your Honor.
We'll give you a minute, Ms. Hartner, if you care to take it.
Just that I would disagree with this whole position that the end of supervision would like equate to some sort of windfall. They're still going to be subject to sentencing pursuant to the probation statutes. Again, they're, as Justice said here, they're no worse off than they were prior to the initial sentencing. It's, they're subject to the same sentence they're going to be coming up for when they initially were sentenced. It's not that they're not, like, they're not completely discharged from probation. They're just not subject to the probation requirements because the court, under the statutes as I read them, doesn't have the authority to extend that time until that revocation is found. And so that's the only argument I have. Thank you.
Thank you very much, counsel. That concludes arguments in State versus Simons. So you are excused. And the court is now adjourned. I want to especially thank Landon Schoonover for being our bailiff today. Thank you, Landon. And I want to again note our class, business law class from Southeast High School. What we're going to do now is take some questions from students. Counsel, you're excused. You can stay if you wish, but you don't have to. And students,